Now again, we're very pleased to see all present. We give each one a very hearty welcome again at the meeting, and we trust the Lord's help and grace for each one. The meetings are still going on until Friday night, in the will of God, and we'll be glad to see you any of these nights that you're able to be with us. Your presence and help will be much appreciated. Now the reading that I would like to take tonight will be from the book of Genesis and chapter 32. The book of Genesis and chapter 32. And we'll read it verse 6. Genesis chapter 32 and verse 6. And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him." Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. And verse number 22. And he rose up that night and took his two wives and his two women servants and his 11 sons and passed over the ford Jabbok. And he took them and sent them over the brook and sent over that he had. And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed, that is, when the man saw that he prevailed not against Jacob, he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, "Let me go, for the day breaketh." And he said, "I will not let thee go except thou bless me." And he said unto him, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Jacob." And he said, "Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed." And Jacob asked him and said, "Tell me, I pray thee, thy name." And he said, "Wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name?" And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, "For I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved." And as he passed over Peniel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. Therefore the children of Israel eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh in the sinew that shrank. I think we should just pick up a verse from the book of Deuteronomy, in chapter 3, I think it is. Deuteronomy chapter 3, just a verse of geography. Deuteronomy chapter 3 and verse 16. "And unto the Reubenites and unto the Gadites I gave from Gilead even unto the river Arnon half the valley and the border, even unto the river Jabbok, which is the border of the children of Ammon." Now I think that's our reading. We trust the Lord's blessing upon his word. We continue our study of these Bible brooks, and tonight we're coming to the brook Jabbok. It's the first brook to be specifically mentioned in Scripture, and it certainly has quite a number of useful lessons for us. I hope we'll be able to excavate at least some of them. We live in a planet where water is very important. The water of oceans and seas, the water of rivers and springs and fountains. We use water for drinking. We cannot do without it. We use water for transportation. We use water for washing. We use water for the production of hydro energy. And of course water is also used to establish boundaries. Counties are sometimes divided by creeks and by rivers and by brooks. And provinces in various parts of the earth, even political divisions, are marked by some of the waterways of this world. That's the function that this particular brook has tonight, the brook Jabbok. That's why I drew your attention to the verse in Deuteronomy chapter 3 that tells us they were given territory unto the border of Jabbok, which is the border of the children of Ammon. So that in ancient times, in the terrain of the ancient world, the brook Jabbok that we are reading about, it was a border marking, it was a boundary brook. and it had that significance in the life of Jacob. We're over now on the eastern side of the River Jordan, and this brook takes its rise in the hills of Gilead, and it comes down through those forests of Gilead by a very tortuous route. It twists and turns for the better part of 40 miles, and sometimes passes through great crags of rock and perpendicular precipices, and then it reaches a more level place. And just about the point where the brook was forded, the point where Jacob crossed this particular brook, it takes its further course and flows into the River Jordan. It has a straighter course from this particular point on. I think there is a sense in which the brook is a little bit like a mirror image of Jacob's life. You see, this was a turning point in Jacob's experience. Up until this point, Jacob's life had been very twisted, and he had meandered through life, and he had navigated his way in a very torturous path with broken relationships and difficulties with other people. But what happened to him at the brook on this particular night, it so changed his personality that the man who had been so twisted up until now, he took a straighter course right until his life flowed into the great ocean of eternity. We are told that at this boundary brook that the Lord blessed him there. There was something about that place that was very significant. We have come here tonight, and as we study this brook and some of its spiritual significance, it would be a great mercy if the Lord would bless us here. And the blessing of this boundary brook, that it might be written in every heart and incorporated in every life. You see, as far as some of these brooks, and in particular this brook Jabbok, was concerned, it was a line of transition. Jacob was reluctant to cross it. It was a very rugged, deep ravine. And Jacob had reached a point in his life where he was crossing into a new phase. And the brook Jabbok was the marker of a transition in Jacob's life. You know that his life is divided into a number of great phases. Broadly speaking, we have the first section of his life when he was in the land of Canaan and in his father's home. Then the second great portion of his life when he was way north in the land of Paddan Aram for 20 years. And then he came back into the land again, and that's the point that we have reached. He's just about to cross the Jabbok and come back to the land where God would want him to be. And the fourth phase of Jacob's life, he's out of the land again, not this time out of it to the north, but he's out of it to the south. And he spends the last 17 years of his life, as you know, in the land of Egypt. But here we are particularly as Jacob comes back into the land at this place of transition. We don't like transition. I don't personally like change. I don't like to have to move into a new phase of life. It would be very comfortable if our life was always just the same landscape. Whenever you make a transition into a new area, there are certain unknowns, there are certain uncertainties, there will be new challenges, you'll be walking on a new terrain. And Jacob, like, sometimes we come to brooks in life's experience and we hesitate because we know that once we cross this brook, things will be quite different. Maybe in the audience tonight, there will be some here and you're at a transition point in life. There are many of them. There's the transition from adolescence into adulthood. That's a very big marker in the life of an individual, with all the conflicting emotions of adolescence, with all the pressures of the later teenage years, as you move into adult life, that is quite a brook, that is quite a boundary, that is quite a transition. There's a transition from singleness to married life, and that is quite a shock for any sensible person. And once you cross that, well, there's very little coming back, and you're entering into a new era and into new territory. Sometimes there's a transition from married life back to singleness. Some that have enjoyed the bliss of happy married life, 20, 30, 40 years, the brook of bereavement sends its chilly waters across the landscape of life, and they suddenly find themselves sitting down in the chamber of bereavement, in the loneliness of a silent room, gazing into the vacancy of an empty chair. That's a transition. From singleness to married life, from married life back to widowhood. I don't know what boundary you may be at. There may be some younger people here. You're at the boundary of moving to another level of education. Maybe from the local school or the secondary school to another school. And mind you, that is quite a boundary. Every time you move across a boundary to a higher level of education, it will bring with it challenges that are greater than the previous stage. Maybe some here about to leave when the summer's over, you'll be crossing the brook into university life. That will be quite a challenge. That will be quite a change. When you step onto that campus, you'll not be there 6 months until you're confronting challenges that will call into play every spiritual conviction of your soul. And if you haven't had experience with God before you cross that boundary, well, things could be very, very difficult. The brook in Jacob's life, and there are certain boundaries in our lives, and they speak of transition. Not only does this brook in Jacob's life speak of transition, it speaks of transformation. Because God was going to deal with Jacob in such a way at this brook, as I said already, that Jacob would never be the same again. God would meet him, and changes would take place in Jacob's thinking and in Jacob's soul, and those changes would equip him for the challenges that he would face on the other side. You know, God is in the great business of restructuring our lives. That's a word that you hear quite a bit now in business, restructuring. And in business, corporations, they do that, and they eliminate some of the baggage, and maybe eliminate some of the workforce, and they streamline. And they do away with some of the accessings, and they have this nice term, restructuring. You see, we all need a little bit of restructuring, and that's what God did with Jacob at the brook Jabbok. It's almost visible in English, not quite, but almost very visible in Hebrew. And I cheat a little bit, but just to make the point clear, these are not exactly the Hebrew consonants, but they'll be close enough. If you take the C of Jacob's life to be a K, it's actually Q in Hebrew, Yaakov. But if you take it to be a K, Jacob, J-A-K-O-B, Jacob. Well, Jacob comes to the J-A-B-B-O-K. And the Jacob at the Jabbok is restructured. And the inside of his name is being taken and moved to another point. He's been turned inside out. That's part of the play on words, I say. Very visible in the Hebrew language, almost visible in the English language. And we're intended to pick it up and to catch it on. Jacob, restructured, transformed at the Jabbok. I think that some of us here tonight could likely do with a little bit of spiritual restructuring, having things in our lives moved around a little bit so that we might be brought into more alignment with the mind of God. And of course, at this point of transition, that also became a point of transformation. What made the difference was the theophany. God appeared. And Jacob, as a result of his experience at this brook, had such an increased sense of God and such an appreciation of the closeness of God's presence. He got closer to God, or if you like to turn it the other way around, the Lord came closer to Jacob than he had ever been before, so close that he was wrestling with him. He was locked in a combat. He was in a vice grip with God. And Jacob so felt the grip of God at the brook Jabbok that the great theophany impressed his spirit, and he was so transformed, he was equipped to make the transition that faced him in crossing that brook. Well, that's a little bit of what I have in mind, dear believers. I have a feeling there could be some of us just about to cross a boundary in our life. It may be a boundary that you never expected to have to face, but very soon you will be coming to that boundary, either yourself or your family. And I do trust before we come to the transition that we'll have dealings with God so that we'll be able to go over to the other side and accept the challenge and meet the difficulties and the dangers and accept the difference and the reconfiguration of our lives as a result of these thing. So here we are, Jacob at the Jabbok, and a great man being restructured and reshaped and reformed by the dealings of God with him. To try and get through into the inside of the story and to find out something of the significance of Jacob's experience here, I think I'd put it together under five words. I'd say a little bit about each one of them, and that will be the meeting and the message through. First of all, I want to think about Jacob intimidated, because the passage tells us, the very verse almost that we began to read with, it tells us Jacob was greatly afraid and he was distressed. You know, fear is a very potent influence in all our lives. And we'll go back to think about what caused Jacob's fear and how his fear was quelled and so on. Jacob, and he was no coward. Jacob wasn't a chicken-hearted creature, but he was intimidated, very much intimidated in this chapter. He didn't want to face this brute, but he had to face it. And the very thought of crossing it put a shiver down his spine, intimidated. Then I say a little bit about Jacob isolated, because we read those four very, very powerful, instructive words. Jacob was left alone, and in the solitude of his soul experience on that dark night, the Lord had dealings with him in his solitariness. He was isolated. Sometimes it's a good thing to be alone with God. Then I want to say a little word about Jacob incapacitated. Jacob got crippled that night. The Lord helped him, but before he helped him, he hurt him. The Lord blessed him, but before he blessed him, he broke him. And he incapacitated him. He touched him in a way that left Jacob just floundering. I'll come back to that in about 15 minutes or so. I'd say a little word. My fourth word will be Jacob interrogated, because the Lord began to ask him some very pointed questions. You know, it's a great thing when you come to a point in life where you're honest in the presence of God. No fudge. No floss. anything frank and out in the open, he was interrogated. And we'd been through the meeting with Jacob illuminated. Because when all this experience was over, he crossed out on the other side of the brook, and when he was walking down the southern side of the Jabbok toward Peniel, the passage closes and it beautifully tells us that the sun rose upon Jacob. There was a new light that shone into his soul's experience. Not just the sun in the sky, but the very light of heaven and the illumination of communion with God. It had entered the interior of this man's being. He was a better man and a brighter man than he had ever been before. Well, the first matter then that I have promised to talk about is Jacob intimidated. As I say, he was no carb, he was no chicken. But on this particular occasion, he finds himself in the grip of fear. Wonder would there be any Christian here afraid? We don't like to admit that we're afraid. But there are some things, you know, I'll be honest, there are some diseases, and when I hear them mentioned, I dread it. I dread the day that a doctor will ever look in my face and say, you have such and such. I dread it. I'll not mention them by name. You could nearly guess. We all have fear. Jacob was afraid when they came back and told him, your brother Esau is coming to you with 400 men. It was bad enough to get Esau coming, but to have Esau coming assisted by 400 men. And when Jacob heard that message, in about verse number 4 of the chapter, it says in verse number 7, he heard the message in verse 6, Esau cometh 400 men with him. Verse 7, then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. What made Jacob afraid was the message that he heard. You know, bad news. I was talking to some people today and they got bad news. Bad news can come from different sources. Many a man gets bad news medically. I've already mentioned that. Many a man gets bad news financially. The phone call from the bank manager, it's bad news. Many a man gets bad news from his employer. One phone call or one email tells him that Friday finishes it. You know, the messages sometimes that we hear, they strike fear into our heart. Second reason that Jacob was afraid was not only the message that he heard, but the memory that he had. You see, things had happened 20 years before it that weren't good. And he had a ruptured relationship with his brother, and he had done underhand things on his brother, and he ran away. And in the business of Paddan Aram, that ruptured relationship had been smothered and suffocated, but now he's coming back to the place of blessing. He's coming back to the land, and he has to face the old hurts, and he has to face the old sins. You see, that's another reason why at times we can be afraid, because of conscience. Wonder, is there any brother here tonight? And I don't want to send anyone on an unnecessary guilt trip. And you could go down memory lane 20 years and there was something happened that has never been fixed up. You know what you need to do, dear brother? There's a brook. And you need to pass it over. It's not called the Brook Jabbok, it's called the Brook Apology. And there are men in this meeting tonight. And that brook apology has been waiting on your passage for years. And you've done things on your brother, and you've said and slandered. And you'll never be blessed until you cross the brook. It's a deep gorge. You swallow your pride, and you slide down into the valley, where you say, I'm sorry. You see, the memories of the past, the message of the future and the meeting face to face. Sometimes we don't like meetings. There are appointments that we don't like having to keep. And Jacob, on this particular occasion, for the great man that he was, and we hold him in high esteem as one of the great patriarchs in the portrait of Old Testament picture gallery, nevertheless, he was intimidated by these things. Dear Christian, learn to face your fear. Don't run away from fear. Don't allow yourself to be harassed. Fears have to be faced, and fears have to be dealt with. And one of the ways, to give credit to good old Jacob, one of the ways that Jacob dealt with his fears, he started to pray. The first time that you ever get Jacob praying is in this chapter. You know, we have to admit, you say, but that's not a very good reason to pray. Just because you're afraid. Well, I don't know. It mightn't be a great reason to pray, but anything that makes you pray is not a bad thing. And the Lord is using fear and trauma and tragedy and heavy tidings in your life. If he's using that to bring you closer to himself, that you might get into his presence with your fears. The reason for Jacob's fears, as I have mentioned, the resolution of Jacob's fear, were to be found at the footstool of the throne of grace. Dear Christian, don't be afraid to pray. There's a God that is willing to listen. Jacob, intimidated. That's why the Lord dealt with Jacob. Because there were certain things in Jacob's soul and certain things in Jacob's heart that needed to be exposed and needed to be brought out into the open. And the Lord's going to do that at the brook Jabbok. And Jacob at the Jabbok will be reconfigured and will be restructured. Maybe the meeting tonight will have a restructuring effect on the hearts and lives of some of us, and that would be a good thing. I say, whatever your transition is from one phase of life to another, again, I was speaking to people today, and the transition that they have come to lately is from health to sickness. They never knew what it was to be in a day in hospital for a year. And for the first months of this year, they hardly have known what it is to be out of it. And when the chimes of 2010 began to die away, the people that I'm thinking of, they crossed the brook from health to sickness. Things will never be the same again until they cross the brook and land in heaven. And their fears, and there are fresh challenges, and the only thing that helped them to face the future is what helped Jacob to face the future. God met him, and God touched him, and God transformed him, and God equipped him for what was ahead. Isolated, intimidated, and Jacob isolated. He was left alone. There are times, I say, when it's good to be alone. He sent his wives across the brook. He's still not ready to face it. They can go across. He sends his children. He sends the women servants. He sends all his possessions. And Jacob was left alone. Can I speak to you for maybe something like 5 minutes in the meeting? Can I speak to you about your private experience with God? I want to look us all in the face tonight, if I can, in the challenge of the meeting here this Tuesday evening. As we move on the pilgrimage of life, maybe this meeting will be a brook, will be a passage point, will be a boundary point in our lives. Can I look us all in the face? Have you all got a private life with God? When was the last time in your life when you were alone with God? Away from the glare of publicity. Away from all the noise and the bustle and the banter of business. You see, Jacob was a man that wasn't often alone. The previous time that God met him at Bethel, he was alone. He lay down on the soil of Bethel, and there was nothing between his skin and the stars but the clothes that he was wearing. And in the loneliness of his solitude, the Lord met him at Bethel. But for 20 years he has been down in Paddan Aram, and he's been in the midst of all the cut and thrust of business, and he enjoyed it to the full. Making money, increasing flocks, in the competition with Laban. Some of you boys, if you had been in with Laban, you'd have known what competitive business really is. And Jacob outwitted him at practically every turn. And Jacob was always getting the upper hand, and it was always some fresh challenge, and business and people and possessions were always crowding into Jacob's life. The people are gone. The possessions are all across the brook, and it's just himself, isolated. Jacob was left alone. You know, we take refuge. We find comfort in people and in possessions. We love to be in the middle of the crowd. And some of my younger Christian friends, we are in a world where there's a great degree of superficial socialising. I'm talking, just in case you don't understand the Dutch, I'm talking about Facebook. That's a superficial form of socialising, which in my opinion is just about practically useless. And everything has to be publicised. If you read Genesis 1 verse 1, you have to put it on as your favourite verse. If you sing hymn 66, you have to publicise it for the world. And having a secret life with God is almost unknown in the shallow, superficial socialising of our time. My dear young Christian, get alone with God. Learn the discipline of solitude. When you get away from other people, have a closet. If you're going to be anything for God, have a closet. Learn in your own life's experience, in the privacy of your personal exercise, learn what we were singing about. Alone with thee, O Master, where the light of earthly glory dies, misunderstood by all I dare to do what thine own heart would praise. And the eye of God looked down, and into the darkness of a Gilead night, God saw a man standing shrinking on the edge of a brook that he didn't want to cross, and he's alone. And God has now space and time to get into his life, and God took the opportunity. I say, you set aside time in your life for God, and when God sees that you give him space, if you cram your life with all the clutter of passing things, God will not have space to communicate with you. When Jacob dispatched the people, and when Jacob dispatched the possession, and he was left alone, God says, I can get in now. God says, I can do something for him now. He says, I can get this man's undivided attention. He'll not be distracted by the things that have fascinated him for 20 years. He says, at last, he has given me a chance to get into close contact with him. Did ever you give God a chance to speak to you? You know, the discipline of solitude is greatly in disrepair in our day. And the discipline of silence. People cannot exist without noise. I'm talking about people in the world. They have to have some sort of a thing banging around them. You can't even go to Tesco's without noise, if you would dare to go to that place. And you can't go and do your shopping, and there's noise banging, and they don't have it banging out for everybody to be here. It's thudding into their own little brain, and their ears are stuffed. And they can't hear things from the outside because they've created the cocoon, their own little music, and they have their own little favourites. You know, dear people, we're listening so much, we're so well tuned into the noise of this world that God can't even get an opportunity to speak to us. The email, the telephones, this text messaging. In God's name, the half of us are going mad. They're sending text messages to people about all the trivia that ever happened on earth. If they saw a butterfly going over their head, to send a text message to California or somewhere to tell them, we've just seen a butterfly. Have a bit of sense. Forget about all the trivia of these things. Dear people, let us give God space. Jacob was left alone. I dare my younger Christian friends tonight, you stand against the tide of the invading technology of our day and say, let it come and go, and I want to create a quiet space in my life where God can speak to me. And I promise you, if you make an appointment for Him and keep it, He'll definitely come and meet you. And all the messages that you think you'll miss from other people, He'll replace them by more important messages from Himself. Wasn't it great? Jacob will never forget the night. The night in all the darkness and stillness. The only thing that he could hear was the gurgling of the brook that he didn't want to pass. And God came near, and came so close that God, Jacob was sitting there, or standing there, I take it probably, on the side of the brook, just wondering, what will all this be, and where do I go from here, and this is a big challenge, and what does the future hold, and how am I going to face it, and the haunting memories of the past, and the disturbing turmoil of his internal conscience. And as Jacob stood there in a world of conflicting, suddenly he was just gripped. I think the first thing he thought was, Esau's got me. I think he thought, Esau, this is one of Esau's 400 men. And he just, and there's a man gripped him as a wrestler. And, Jacob is now, he finds himself in the grip of God. Were you ever in the grip of God? You know, when God grips a man, there are some people in the meeting say it for 40 years and you've never known it yet. When God grips a man and holds him in the grasp of grace, he'll never get over it. He'll never be the same shape again. Some of you have never been alone with God to allow him to get a hold of you. You've protected and barricaded yourself behind bits and pieces and things and people, and God can't get in. But this man in his isolation, and he's wrestling. This man's wrestling. And you know, I don't know too much about wrestling, but I know enough to have, at least in my head, the superficial idea that part of the purpose of the wrestler is to get the boy down. Pin him down. In fact, the word, the Hebrew word wrestle, is cognate with the word dust. If you get two boys in a wrestle, they'll raise a bit of stir, as we would say in County Armagh. They'll raise a bit of dust, and the purpose of the wrestling is to pin one man down to the dust. And God, you know, Jacob, I'll tell you this, Jacob wasn't an easy boy to pin down. And even the Lord couldn't pin him down for a good while. He was as slippery as some of the boys here. There are boys here tonight, and people have been trying to pin you down for years, and you can wriggle like a needle, and even the Lord couldn't pin you down. And you've stayed upright and proud and resist. And I tell you, Jacob put in some struggle. He was seized and he was struggling. And the man struggled on, and old Jacob, I tell you, he praised and he pushed. they hadn't been a boy able to get him down yet. Laban was a fair old wrestler. But Jacob cooked him. And Esau was a fair wrestler, and Jacob had outwitted him, and Jacob was, he couldn't. And at last the man said, I tell you what I'll do, I'll touch him. Boom. Just in the hollow of his thigh. And Jacob suddenly found, I can't push, I can't praise, I've lost leverage. And if he hadn't clung to the man, he would have hit the floor. I'm glad the man didn't drop him. You know, that's what the Lord does with us, dear people. He sometimes brings us down to a point where he takes away the leverage in our life. I like to do a fair wee bit of praising. And I like to think about Gilliland's strength. And I can handle this. And if this comes my way, I'll shift this way. And if that comes, I'll dodge this way. And I'm fairly nimble and active. And I could move around. And I could work all this. Jacob was a manipulator. Jacob was a maneuver. He had been nimble for years. Anybody that tangled with Jacob, he always slipped out of their grip. He didn't move this time. And he's incapacitated. And if Jacob hadn't clung, he would have been flat on his back on the floor. And it suddenly dawns upon him at the Jabba. He says, this whole thing of my life has to be reshaped. He said, I've been spelling things the wrong way, you know. He said, you don't get through life with God conniving and contriving. He said, you get the blessing by clinging. Maybe I'm speaking to a believer here tonight, and some way in your life God has come into you, and in the solitude of life's sorrows and experiences, you feel of recent times you have been in the very grip of God, the pressure of God in your life. That's a real thing, you know. Getting to grips with God and God getting to grips with you. No distance. Once you're wrestling together, you're in close contact. Oh, dear believers, wouldn't it be great if we could be in close contact with God? And Jacob discovers, here I am, and my helplessness and my natural power has been crippled. Maybe a Christian here, and you feel that God has put his hand into your life, and he has touched you in such a way that he has removed every possible prop and every human hope, and he has just left you hanging helpless upon himself. That's what God does, you know. I hope that we get a little look at the picture. I'll have to move on because I got to talk about it a good little bit more. Of course, in it all, when Jacob was clinging to this man and he hadn't a leg to stand on, literally, because the hollow of his thigh had been touched and he had no more power to drive or push or shove, and he's just hanging upon this man, he cries out for blessing. He says, this is what I need. This man that first of all came into my life in this moment of need and crisis, at this transition point, he seemed to be an assailant. He said, I'm going to ask him to bless me. He said, my future's in his hands. He said, if he drops me, I'll smash on the floor. He said, if he drops me now, I'll never walk again. He said, my only hope is to cling to him. I say to some dear Christian here tonight, and you're just at the desperation point, may God grant that you'll be helped to cling to him. Learn to cling. Learn to lean. Hold on to God at all costs. I'll say this, dear believer, just as he never let Jacob down, he'll not let you down. You're maybe at the boundary of life in that way. The Lord says, I'll bless you, but he says, before I bless you, I want to ask you a question. What's your name? The man that was intimidated and isolated and incapacitated, he's now interrogated. And he just tells the truth. Did you ever tell the Lord a lie? Did you ever tell the brethren a lie? There's maybe some people here, and that's the brook that you need to cross, just the brook of telling the truth. You need to come clean. You've lived a life of deception up until now. Deception in business. Deception in relationships. Deception in personal life. And you're not getting close to God, and your spiritual life is shrinking and withering, and you know that behind the big front things are not right. You know what has to happen? You just need to come into the presence of God and come clean. Tell the truth. You know that when Jacob was asked that question before, he waffled and he dressed himself up and he hesitated and he stumbled and he stuttered and he claimed to be Esau. What is thy name? My name is Jacob. And he blessed him there. You know, God doesn't bless people in false pretenses. If I want to know blessing, I can only get blessing. I said already, the Lord had, those hands that came and gripped Jacob were hands full of, they were full of blessing. But before the Lord could bless him, he had to break him. I would love to get the blessing, I'll be honest. I wouldn't be too keen on the breaking. But one's the path to the other. Are you prepared to put yourself in the hands of God? To get alone with Him? To place your life at His disposal? Let Him take a grip of things. And once He takes a hold of life, you never know what shape it will finish. But it will all be a life that will be moulded for His pleasure, illuminated. You know, it was a great night and an experience, because old Jacob, it tells us that he walked out with a limp. He halted upon his thigh. He had a new step, and the sun rose upon Jacob as he passed over Peniel. He had a new sunshine, and he's 97. It was the dawning of a new day. There was a new morning broke open for this 97-year-old man as a result of his time alone in the presence of God. I say this, dear brethren, as I close the meeting. Isn't it great to know that it's never too late to make a new beginning? Some of you brethren in your 60s, you've never got into close grips with God yet, and you were saved from your teens. You've kept the Lord at a distance with the bits and pieces of things for years. Can I say, there could still be a turning point, a new sense of God. I have seen God face to face. A new step. You see, nobody saw what happened between Jacob and God, but they saw the results of it. Spend a night with God, and you'll not need to advertise it. One night alone with God, you won't need to paste it on the book. People will see the effects of it for the rest of your days upon earth. A new sense of God, a new step in His gate, and a new sunshine in his soul. I say a bigger and a better and a brighter man, but a broken man and a blessed man. And he's walking out now for the glory of God. And of course in the next chapter, I don't go into it, I'll studiously avoid it, but he meets Esau. You say, how did he meet Esau? Well, he got the people arranged, and he got the animals arranged, and he walked out in front of them and he met Esau. In chapter 32, he was no softy, you know. In chapter 32, he put the animals there, and he put the wives, and he said at the back, he says, if this turns out awkward, he says, I'll hook it. He says, if Esau gives these front ones a beating, I'll clear off. God says, you'll sting. He says, you'll not run away. When I finish with you, you'll not be able to run. God took the scheming out of him. He was profitable. It was a profitable night. It was a painful night. It was private. It was personal. It was physical. God had to touch his body in order to bless his soul. I dread that. Sometimes God has to touch our bodies to see the growth of our soul. And when God has finished with them, all idea of running away and the crafty was all gone, and he just said, and in front of the whole crowd, the young fellow walked out limping to meet Esau. Not a fear, because he had seen the face of God and he could look any man in the eye. Once you get a look at God, it puts a resilience into your soul that you can face the future. You know, the brook, as far as Jacob is concerned, it was a boundary. It was a boundary. As far as Jacob is concerned, the brook was a barrier. Didn't want to have to go down into that deep ravine. But as far as Jacob was concerned, the brook was a blessing. That's it, dear. I don't know what the brook is in your life. My beloved brethren and sisters, there might be running across in front of your very eyes tonight a deep, dark ravine with its turbid water. It's a boundary that you don't want to cross. It's a barrier that you dread. I'll say to you, put your hand in God. And as you cross that boundary, under the hand of God, it could become a blessing to your soul that would make a change for the rest of your life. The boy at the brook Bezor. The battle at the brook Elah. The boundary of the brook Jabbok. And don't miss tomorrow night's exciting issue. Shall we bow to pray? Our Father, we bow in the Lord's precious name. We thank thee for bringing us this far in our lives. Thou hast guided and directed. We can say with another, 'tis grace that brought us safe thus far, and 'tis grace that will lead us home. We thank thee for thy dealings with Jacob. We thank thee for a life that was ascending and improving in its quality. We ask that thou wilt help us to continue our sojourn with thee. We know that thou wouldst make us better people if only we would give to thee the privacy and the space and the permission which thou dost desire. In a noisy world of deadlines and commitments and intrusions, we pray that thou wilt help us to make space for communion with thyself, so that our lives may be shaped from the inside and may be conformed on the outside for thy pleasure and for thy service. We give our thanks for the meeting, and we give our thanks for thy beloved people, and ask thy parting blessing. Grant that might be said of us as was said of this man, he blessed him there. We ask for thy blessing here in the Lord Jesus' precious name. Amen.